Hey, this is Kevin from Kevin's Barbecue Joints, and welcome to episode 95 of the Kevin's Barbecue Joints podcast. And in this episode, I get a chance to talk to George Motz, who is definitely one of the top hamburger experts in the United States, if not the expert on hamburger. Funny thing, I thought I had lost this interview. I couldn't find it. It was named something strangely, and I thought it got corrupted and lost, and I was definitely sad because it was a great interview, and I felt bad, and it was hard to get a hold of George and get our schedules, because he's so busy, our schedules matched up. But I did find it, and I've edited it, and now I have it for you, and I think you're going to love it. It's his knowledge on hamburgers and the history of hamburgers is so spectacular, and you're going to learn so much from this episode, I promise you. If you like barbecue, there's a 99.9% chance that you like hamburgers, and he's a wealth of knowledge. He has four books, essentially. Hamburger America, his first book, it was re-released in the spring of this year with a number of hamburger spots added, some that went away, and he talks all about that and why certain ones are gone and when certain ones were added. But it's going to be super enjoyable. If you don't go away from this learning something, you obviously have the same kind of knowledge that George has. If you're digging these, please subscribe. I don't want you missing out. Don't want you missing out on all the cool stuff. I have a lot more interviews coming up that are really great, along with a lot of old ones that I think you can only see about 20 on your podcast app if you don't subscribe. So I want to make sure there's over 90. So I want to make sure you do get those. I have a YouTube channel at youtube.com/kevinsbbqjoints with the YouTube versions of these interviews, as well as tons more content, barbecue joint tours, butcher shop visits, etc. I also have a website at kevinsbbqjoints.com with a ton more content, links to all the podcasts, all the YouTube stuff. I think it'll be a useful tool. Thanks so much. Enjoy. Good morning. How are you doing?
Good morning. I'm Grace. How you doing?
Good. So what do you have going on? Number one, I want to talk about your history. Because if you like barbecue, there's 99.9% chance you like hamburgers. And you're the expert on hamburgers. And I want to know how you became the expert. What was the impetus for that? And then also, I saw you recently, like a couple days ago or yesterday, with Jess Pryles. And what was that?
I was there last night, yeah.
What was that?
I'm a huge fan of barbecue. I mean, I love barbecue. I mean, I love, if it's nostalgic American, I'm all over it. So for me, it's not just about, it is a lot about hamburgers.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? I'm a hamburger expert, unquestionably. Started almost, I think, 18 years ago now. 2001 is really when it all got started.
So 17-ish, 18.
18-ish. 17-ish, 18 years. I shoot a lot. I shoot TV commercials. And back then I was a little bit bored of shooting, you know, kitty litter commercials and that kind of thing. So I'm trying to find something different. I wanted to shoot a documentary. And a friend of mine had suggested, you know, a food documentary. I said, that's a good idea. I don't know. I knew nothing about food. I knew food tasted good. That's about it. And nobody was doing any food content, food documentaries at all.
For sure.
The Food Network was brand new. I mean, they hadn't actually done anything yet. I had a friend at Food Network and they said, well, if you can give us some, you know, some content, we'll run that in between shows as sort of an interstitial thing, you know, give me a 5 or 6 minute piece.
Oh, okay.
So I looked around for subjects and somebody said, oh yeah, I just saw a documentary about hot dogs. Maybe you could do something, some other type of, you know, simple American food like that. And I said, okay, let's take a look at hamburgers. And no one had done any kind of hamburger documentary, nothing at all. No one had ever really documented the hamburger, with the exception of Jane and Michael Stern. They had talked about it in their book, Road Food, and I was a huge fan of Jane and Michael Stern.
Yes, I've always been. Yeah, that's a great book too, yeah.
Great book. I honestly wish that each entry was a little bit longer.
I agree completely.
You want to really dig in, and you can't because each entry is so short.
They were kind of pioneers, you're right. I forgot about that.
Yeah. So made a hamburger documentary. I started working on a hamburger content for Food Network, and we got through one clip. We were filming the Bobcat Bite, which is unfortunately gone now, but the Bobcat Bite in Santa Fe with John and Bonnie Ecker. And I got about halfway through the interview. I turned and looked at my wife at the time, who was helping me out. And I said, we've got something much bigger than just some silly little interstitial thing for the Food Network. Let's make a full size documentary. Okay. And that's when I realized I should make a full size documentary. And I found 10 of my favorite hamburger stories. And of course to be in the film, the original film, Hamburger America, which became the full-size documentary, you had to have a burger on the menu for over 40 years. You had to have a great story to tell. You had to use fresh ground beef. So I took the original the original 10 that I decided to put in the film and narrowed it to 8 different restaurants. They were just great stories. And the two that we took out from the original 10, one was in New York, one was in Los Angeles. Oh. And I wanted people to get out there and see America. I wanted people to not think about, you know, I want to fly into New York and have a great burger. Like, no, get out there. Go to you know, get to the center of the country. Get to the Midwest. You know, go to Santa Fe, New Mexico. And there were great stories. I mean, the one was in Memphis. One was about the deep fried burger. We did a small piece on the steamed cheeseburger of Central Connecticut, of Meriden, Connecticut. And these are stories that people hadn't really heard about unless you had, you know, had been there before.
Yeah, exactly.
Or you had a fan of, about Jane and Michael Stern. And because they were, I'd say half the burgers in the film came from research from their books anyway.
When you were doing this, like what was the reception and what made you think, well, I'm going to kind of steer a little bit more toward this?
It wasn't me. I finished the film. I made the film for next to nothing. And then ended up getting picked up. It went into a bidding war between PBS and the Sundance Channel. Oh. And Sundance Channel ended up having the deeper pockets. And they went on the Sundance Channel. It aired for 18 months. It picked up a small cult following, including a publisher that called me and said, we'd like to take your hamburger research and roll it into a guidebook. And I said, I only know these 8 places, and I'm not really a hamburger expert at all. I mean, I may look like one, but I'm not. And they said, well, if you know these places, you could probably figure it out. I said, okay. So I started researching 100 different places. So the original film was 8 hamburger places. And then the first book, Hamburger America, the book, became a guidebook to 100 great hamburgers in America. And we eased off on the criteria. You had to have burger on the menu for 20 years.
Okay.
So that actually allowed a lot of other classic places that were only around for, you know, a little over 20 years to get into the book. And that became a tremendous – I've never worked so hard in my life. It was one of the hardest things I've ever had to do in my life was make that book.
Did you visit them all too? Was that part of the
– Yeah, part of the – I'm a very integrity-based guy. Mm-hmm. I believe that you have to be there. You can't phone this stuff in. Yeah. You can't make it up. You have to be real. And these stories are about people, and you can't really fake that.
That's true. Yeah.
If you're not talking to these people, you're not making the connections. You're not really. I don't think you're really getting the most out of it you possibly can.
And so what are some highlights from? What are some highlights? Some interesting hamburgers from that initial 100 list from that first book.
I mean, so one of my favorites. Well, a bunch of my favorites are obviously in the film.
Yeah.
The Mears store in Mears, Oklahoma. Was a huge favorite of mine because he was raising his own cattle for barbecue and for the hamburgers in the restaurant. He wasn't buying meat from anywhere other source. He had his own. He had two lots that they're called that were two ranch lots that were full. He had 60, 70 head of cattle,
wow.
And he would send one to slaughter every week, every 6 days or so, just for the barbecue and for the burgers in his restaurant.
Does he still do this?
He still does it, yeah. He's still doing it today. It's amazing. He works with his son. His son now runs the ranch, and they still supply the restaurant. The restaurant is unbelievably popular.
It's also in the middle of nowhere. I have to visit that. What city is that again?
It's the Mears store in Mears, Oklahoma.
Mears, Oklahoma.
It's about three hours southwest of Oklahoma City.
Okay. Oh, wow.
I mean, it's out there. It's so remote that the story that I was told was it was a place where Bonnie and Clyde hid out, actually the longest. They were actually able to get away the longest by hiding near Mears.
Really, that's cool. Yeah. And that's probably in doing that. And that's what I kind of like people to do, like you do, is go out on like little on road trips and see little small towns. And because a lot of people too have never probably left a big city. I know people that have never really traveled, or if they've traveled, they've gone to Hawaii and back. And I think that's what's kind of important. Those little stories like Bonnie and Clyde, people almost in their minds think that's a myth and that's not even real.
Yeah. And I would, honestly, when I was out there trying to find stories, what I would do is I would sit at the bar or the counter or the table, talk to people. And I always realized that if I was there for an hour, they would give me the sort of the crib notes, the glossy, the glossy stuff, you know, the stuff they would tell the paper. Oh, you know, James Dean once ate here or some, you know, crap story like that. But I realized that if I stuck around for like an hour and a half, 2 hours, I would start to get the real deal. You know, my brother built this, or, you know, the day before my dad died, he, you know, invented this burger. And the stories that I really wanted to hear would always come out after they became comfortable with me. So in a way, Hamburger America, the book, is all these sort of deep stories about people actually sharing. I mean, they're sharing their lives and their stories with me.
And it's a story about America in as much as it is burgers. It's burgers is just the vehicle to take you on this journey.
No, it's true. And I've learned a lot about people. And people do need to get out there and travel the country. Mm-hmm. People, you know, it's funny. I when I was in college, I refused to go abroad and see the rest of the world until I saw America. So I crisscrossed the country about six times before I was 22.
Wow.
And then I realized, okay, now I can go out and see the
two. You're my dad reincarnated, because he never wanted to go to Europe. He always said that there's so much to see here in America that so people much. Don't get a chance. And then, and even if you just go 3-4 hours out of your town, you see things that you've never seen before. And you'll see a broken down truck or something like, and then a burnt down building. And you're like, wait a second, this was here all the time.
You know, years ago, my dad said, I said, Dad, why don't you travel? My dad would never travel outside the country. And he said, well, I'm always afraid, honestly, of forgetting my underwear. I said, Dad, you know, they wear underwear in other countries, Dad.
That is hilarious.
That I'd like to actually, maybe what if I did go to a country without underwear and just see what happens? Let's just see if I can find a pair.
Well, isn't it interesting to buy their underwear and see what their underwear is all about?
Either anything, you know, I mean, one of my all-time favorite things to do when I travel, and I do this every place I go, is to go to a supermarket. I go to a supermarket because you walk into a supermarket, and you, especially if you're really local, if you get off the beaten path and you go out there, you start to find out that, you know, people live very similar the way you live, mm-hmm. but everything is a little bit one click off.
Uh-huh.
You know, the exchange rate, the ingredients, all this stuff. And it's fun to see how people live, because when you're in a supermarket, you're actually seeing literally how they live. That's how they mm-hmm. subsist and survive.
On a day-to-day, yeah. No, when I lived in Japan in Osaka for 6 months, and going to a supermarket there, it was fascinating. It was just so interesting to see like what products they have, what products they don't. They didn't have like their bread selection at the time was so different than ours, and their like milk products. And it's fascinating. Because you have 3 books total, right? Am I 1, 2, 3, 4? Are you on your fourth book, or?
I'm actually it's The Hamburger America has been in three different iterations now. Okay. The third version came out 2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago, yes.
I also made a cookbook called The Great American Burger Book. This one.
Yeah, that one. Yeah.
So this is a cookbook. This is what happened was my agent said, you really should make a cookbook. So that's a good point. I never even thought about that, but I'm not a chef. And I said, well, you know a lot about hamburgers. So I made a cookbook based on the stuff I've learned from being on the road. It's a book about regional hamburgers. It's not a book about toppings. A lot of hamburger books tend to be about toppings, like putting stuff on the burger. This is about region. It's about literally about going from region to region and trying to find method. It's all about method, hamburger method, not about toppings.
And how it differentiates region to region, or something.
Yeah, I mean, it's a combination of a little bit of history, so you can figure out the historical context of that burger in that region, but also how they make it, which is, you know, some are steamed, some are grilled, some are deep fried. I mean, there's a bunch of different ways to make a hamburger, and every one of those methods have some sort of historical context to the hamburger culture in America.
Today, if you went to get a burger, is there a certain type of burger, because you've had so many, that you prefer? I know that there's...
I don't play favorites, yes. But what I do is I like to play the simplicity game that, you know, the minute you start loading up your burger with all kinds of crap, you take away from the actual hamburger experience that you should be appreciating, which is that hamburgers really should be, if you think about in this history of the hamburger, the original hamburgers were nothing more than meat, maybe some onions, maybe some mustard mm-hmm. on a bun, and that was it. Where you actually considered grease to be a condiment. Grease itself is a great vehicle for flavor.
True, yeah.
Because grease contains rendered beef fat, which is, I mean, that's really the reason you pick up a hamburger in the first place, is to eat rendered beef fat.
Exactly.
Yeah, so to me, grease really is a condiment, which is important. But when you start adding stuff to that, you start taking away from that element. I mean, salt is very important. Salt and beef grease really is the only thing you honestly need. Onions are a great enhancer.
Mm-hmm.
Onions are a great enhancer for a burger. So honestly, if you know, I've been railing against lately the mac and cheese burger, which is this sort of, you know, Instagram internet phenomenon that looks phenomenal. I shouldn't say it looks
interesting. I guess
it looks interesting. It looks exciting, but it tastes horrible. Uh-huh. I mean, people, that's not what a burger. You shouldn't be putting hot cheesy pasta in your mouth while you're trying to bite a hamburger.
It falls apart and it gets it.
It's just a mess. It just doesn't take you. Those two textures should not be in your mouth at the same time. They shouldn't be sharing space in your mouth. People are crazy. They actually think it tastes good. I think it's actually a good tasting burger. I said, no, you're wrong. You just like the fact that it looks good on Instagram. Mm-hmm. And that, so I've been, so the deal, anybody who I follow who posts a picture of mac and cheeseburger, they get instantly unfollowed. And it's the only sort of mean awesome. Thing I can do to somebody. And I don't mean to be mean. I just – my sense is I can't look at this burger on my phone anymore.
You don't want that coming through your feed at all, right?
No. It's in my phone. It's personal. Someone is attacking my sensibilities with this stupid burger. So
do you feel like cheese is a necessary condiment?
Oh, cheese is definitely a necessary condiment. Yeah. It's one of the greatest additions to the hamburger that came along, you know, a few years after – I mean many years, probably – I don't think there was like a widespread cheese use until the 30s, I think.
Okay.
Or maybe late 20s. But I mean, when I could go into the history of the burger, I think is totally fascinating.
Yeah, let's get into that really quick. Yeah, I love that.
But to answer your question, though, I mean, to me, the simplest burger is the best. Yeah. And honestly, that does tie back into the history of the hamburger, because to me, the best hamburger you can make out there is what I call the original American hamburger. Of all things, it's hard to imagine, but White Castle actually is responsible for saving the American hamburger in the 1920s.
Hmm.
Specifically 1919, a guy named Walt Anderson opened a small stand to sell hamburgers in Wichita, Kansas.
Okay.
And he was just trying to make a buck. Opened up one day, he somehow had a flat top and started smashing little balls of beef on a flat top and selling them, and realized that people who were buying this burger was popular with everyone. At that time, hamburgers were only popular with like working class America, because it had gotten a bad name from Upton Sinclair, which is fine. Upton Sinclair wrote an expose in the early part of the century called The Jungle. Obviously, we know The Jungle.
Mm-hmm.
The Jungle actually it said a lot of bad things that need to be said about the Chicago meatpacking industry. And from that point on, most people thought that, you know, meat in general, if it wasn't, you know, if you weren't raising it yourself and slaughtering yourself, was probably going to be dangerous and could potentially kill you.
Wow.
So at that point, hamburgers were a big part of that. People saw hamburgers as something that was a dangerous food to eat. So when Walt Anderson started making hamburgers in Wichita, he thought he was only selling to people who were, you know, who had no money, who couldn't afford it. He was selling in downtown Wichita, and a guy named Billy Ingram came by. Billy Ingram was a very important part of White Castle in the hamburger history. He was an entrepreneur, and he saw that there were kids buying hamburgers at Walt Anderson's stand and then running around the corner and jumping into limousines to go back to the wealthy side of town. And he said, I got this. So he went to Walt and he said, let's blow this out. Let's make something that, you know, can be appreciated by everybody. So the first thing they did was they cleaned up the hamburger's image, and they built a place called White Castle, white signifying cleanliness, and castle signifying strength.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the idea behind White Castle, was to build this, you know, rebrand the hamburger. And right away, they saw it as something clean and new and fresh. They would actually grow. Sometimes I think in the beginning, they were showing they had ground meat right in front of everybody. And it became a very popular thing.
Did they always have that stamp with the holes in it? Like with the little divots in it?
That came later.
Okay.
You know, White Castle, I mean, for all of its innovation, they actually did survive because of the innovation. During the meat rationing during World War II, and also they made it through the Depression, made it through World War II. They made it through because they made all these innovations. One of the most important ones is they were the first to freeze beef for hamburgers.
Hmm.
They were also the first to make hamburger patties. Huh. They did actually stamp those holes in the patties. They said because it actually allowed steam to come through and cook faster. The reality was that those five little holes would create, you know, could create another burger. Beef that was popped out of that burger would create the next patty, for whatever.
Sure. Yeah.
They were all just trying to save money. I mean, a lot of restaurants went out of business during shut down because hamburger restaurants sold beef. And there was Meatless Tuesdays, for example. And you couldn't sell beef on a Tuesday.
See, people don't realize that. That's a big deal.
In your restaurant, shut down for the day. You couldn't make money. And it got worse and worse. And White Castle, because of innovation, they actually were able to survive. So obviously, between the freezing and the patty forming and all that kind of stuff, it's a very different product today. But the good news is that the burger that they created back in the 20s still exists in a lot of other places that copied them.
Okay.
Namely, other white ones. Like you got White Manna. White Rose in New Jersey. You've got a lot of restaurants that actually still serve the original American hamburger, the small slider with squished onions in it. Powers Hamburgers in Fort Wayne, Indiana. It still is. That contains the DNA in that burger of the original American hamburger from White Castle.
Wow, that's so awesome.
Cozy Inn in Salina, Kansas. Uh-huh. Powers White Manna, New Jersey. I mean, there's so many. There's Hamburger Inn in Ardmore, Oklahoma. I mean, there's so many restaurants like that still serve that tiny burger that is the original American hamburger.
So what people need to do is they need to buy your book. And so when they're traveling for barbecue, they could – because they'll have a lot of barbecue and they'll be crazy and they'll look at my guides and they'll use those or other people's guides. And then they'll need to have hamburgers because that's something you'll want either for dinner or to take a break in a day. And then they could historically – because that's – What you've just said is so fascinating. That's so interesting. It's interesting how everything branched. It makes sense that things would branch off from that because that's happened in barbecue. That's happened in some like sushi. A lot of like,
Right.
there's like a chef who trained everyone and, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I love barbecue. I love barbecue so much, but it does, you know, you it does get slightly repetitive, like a hamburger. You need to take a break once in a while. And of course, you know, obviously some of the best, you know, I'm just going to say this out there, but some of the best barbecue, I mean, per capita is in Texas, obviously. There's a lot of great barbecue in Texas, and it's everywhere. But it's also a lot of great burgers in Texas. I mean, not surprisingly, there, I think there, in my guidebook, there may be over 20 hamburgers or 30 hamburgers in my book alone, just in Texas.
Can you name off a couple?
I mean, actually, I'm going to pull the book out. I'll show
Yeah,
you.
let's do it.
I mean, there's so many. I mean, the state is enormous.
Have you been to Ed's? Is it Ed's? Is that the
So that's the, I was going to talk about Ed's, because Ed's is right behind Louis Miller's, right? Yeah. That's a great, have you had that burger? I mean, there's so many. I get this book, I'm flipping out. I can't believe how many there are. But there's like, I mean, you've got Top Notch. Top Notch is in Austin. It's a classic, like, drive-in. It's where they, I guess, they filmed part of not Boogie Nights. What's the movie there? Days and Confused was
Oh,
filmed there. You know,
Kent McConaughey.
Stanton City Bites in Houston, right in the middle of the first ward in Houston. You know, I don't know if you know Morris Neal's,
Yeah, I've heard of
Morris Neal's
that.
Handy Hamburger. I mean, this is just classic burgers. Langford in Houston. Kincaid's obviously in Fort Worth. These are all close to very good barbecue joints. You know, Herd's Hamburgers. Herd's is fantastic. They are in Jacksboro, in the middle of nowhere. Ed's Place. There's Ed's Place. Look at that burger. Oh,
And it's simple. It's
yeah.
just a little. It's just a bar with a flat top, really.
It's a bar with a flat top, and sort of they made a burger that was based on a burger of that place that had closed down. It's a great story where there was a place in town that closed. Everybody loved this one burger place in Taylor. It went out of business. So somebody went over to Ed's bar and said, "Hey, can you make that burger?" And he said, "Sure, I can try." And he said, "There's a few details to making the burger." He started making the burger and he said, "Well, we just copied the burger of the place that closed down. And that's why it tastes so good."
Oh wow, that's so
But
funny. And it's not a
all the
place, it's a
stories.
place you get a bag of chips. It's not a
What are they? Domino. They play Domino's? What do they play there?
I think they play, yeah, that's a good question. That's a very good. All I know is they serve cold beer.
They had a, well, there's lots of pool there, but there's also domino. Yeah, domino tables. They're all like, they had the dominoes and the sweaters. You know about the sweaters at Ed's?
At first, why am
The
I for
sweaters.
what?
The sweaters are people who would stand around the table watching people play dominoes. They called them sweaters.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Weird. So there were these signs everywhere that said, I mean, there's a sign right here. It says, "Sweaters do not block the passage to the restrooms."
That's
They
hilarious.
were, and they were just watching. They were watching the players play. I mean, it was when it
Nice.
was obviously a big deal back then.
That's so
So,
funny. That's so crazy. That's awesome. Yeah, and it's and those like a place like Ed's, that's a place that people should seek out when they're looking for like little small hole in the wall. I could if I'm driving somewhere and I see a little burger spot, I'll stop and sometimes I'll be disappointed because maybe it's because of the economy or the way their business has been run, they're not putting out the best quality like they used to. But it's worth stopping.
searching, I think my name and a hamburger restaurant is probably a good start.
That's good. Yeah, that's a great start. No, that's
That does.
perfect.
But people do have, I mean, I have a bunch of like fans who now have gone through almost the entire book and visited all the places I visited. And they've gotten the book signed by people who work in the restaurant.
That is
And
awesome.
some guy yelled at me the other day. He's like, "I can't believe you have a new book. I just finished your 150 and now you've added 50."
Why would he be upset about
People
that?
look for it. Look at that.
That sounds like something in my mind. I'd be like excited that there's like 50 more.
Right. Actually, what's happened also is that the new book has 200 restaurants. This is the new book. It has 200 restaurants in it.
They're like, hold it up, pull it back a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah,
Okay.
it's a guidebook to 200 restaurants.
Perfect. Okay.
But it's we lost 14 since the last publication came out. Yeah. So I mean, some of them just went out of business. Some lost their way and they weren't very good anymore. So I pulled them out. One had a bad attitude. They hit the chopping block.
That's good.
But a bunch of them also burned to the ground. I mean, two of them burned to the ground, unfortunately.
Probably a grease fire or something.
Yeah, grease fire is just old. I mean, one place was, oh, Cottam's Hubcap Grill, and Cottam's Mercantile. They burned to the ground, but they said the place had electrical fire. It was an old building, was like 120, 130 years old, and it burned to the ground in like a matter of minutes.
Whoa.
It was gone. It was kind of the place you walked in there, and it smelled like that old attic smell, like in an old house. You know, you're like, yeah, this doesn't. It smelled like a tinderbox. It smelled like you could like fart and the thing would explode.
Yeah, there's places like
Was
that. You're
ready to
like
go.
how
I hate
does
to
this
say.
place even still exist? Yeah.
Yeah, and it would have burned to the ground. I was like, yeah, I kind of saw that coming. But unfortunately, we lost a lot of very valuable American history there, American gastronomic history. Clearly, it's very sad. I don't even know what their plans are right now to rebuild. I hope they do rebuild, but it's in Arkansas. It's a very important part of Arkansas, food history. Yeah. But it's gone. And so I had to replace it in the book. So I ended up, even though I did 200 places in this version of the book, I had to actually add 14 new ones. So it actually became 64 new entries to the book.
Oh, very cool. Oh, excellent. And that's available right now. It came out, what, 2 weeks ago, you said?
It came out about 2 weeks ago, yeah. Yeah, it's available now. People are pretty excited about it.
Thanks. Oh, yeah.
Fans of the hamburger in American, food history.
Yeah, mine's arriving in 2 days, so I'm excited. It's supposed to arrive Monday. Thanks. So, excellent. Well, and also too, when you travel around, I want to kind of tie this a little bit into barbecue. Are there any places that you we had talked about kind of online? If there's any places that have any barbecue places that serve good burgers?
Yeah, not many. Honestly, it's funny how to me, if you're focusing on the hamburger, I'm a fan of yours because I want to make sure you're actually focusing on the hamburger. A lot of times, you're focusing on a bunch of other things like barbecue and sushi, you're not going to make any of them great at all.
True.
I'm trying to think. I tried to rack my brain. I couldn't think of any. Obviously, Ed's place is literally in the parking lot behind Louis Miller.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, Louis Miller.
Yeah.
Wayne's so close. Right, yeah. And a lot of these places are very close to barbecue joints, but they're not. I couldn't think of anyone. I couldn't think of anyone that actually made great burgers that fit the criteria to be in the book, but also made great barbecue, unfortunately.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's okay. No, that's okay. Are there any places though that are memorable on your visits, like in your travels, that you really love, or places that are a certain style that you love?
I mean, to me, I like it all. I mean, I'm a big fan of Texas salt and pepper, mm-hmm. beef. I love beef. I mean, it's because of my love of the hamburger. And to me, a hamburger really is only beef. There's no, you can't, if a hamburger is made with turkey, it's not a hamburger anymore. It's some meatloaf situation that was better off in like a pasta or like,
yeah, exactly.
turkey meatball. And I don't believe that that's really, that should not be considered to be a hamburger. So I have a great love of beef. So I think that Texas obviously has figured out, how to make great, great barbecue when it comes to beef. Billy Durney in New York is clearly the greatest New York version of Texas barbecue. He has really figured it out. And to the point where in the beginning, we all thought he was – I thought he was getting stuff shipped in from Texas. It was that good. We were like, how the F did this guy come out of nowhere and have barbecue this good? I started asking friends of mine who are barbecue experts, and they said, yeah, we don't – he just studied. He's very good. He figured it out. He's been training himself for a decade.
Patio, yeah.
And I said, let's go around back, see if we can find some FedEx boxes behind the restaurant. It doesn't make any sense. How is a Brooklyn guy – figuring this out. And I told him that story. I said, I think he wanted to kill me. Yeah, he's a good friend of mine. Thank God. It's good.
He's one of the best people around. And I had the pleasure of talking to him, and I love that guy. Yeah.
He's a good dude. But I'm trying to think what else. I mean, I like ribs, honestly, but I would kick the rib out of bed for the beef rib any day. Pork ribs are great, but to me, it's all about the beef. I love the hot gut sausage. It's just the best. To me, the beef tends to be I gravitate more towards the beef barbecue than pork barbecue. I've tried every time I'm on the road eating hamburgers, especially out of North Carolina, I try to get to, find some of that barbecue in, obviously the east of the state, west of the state, depending on where you are. Mm-hmm. Even though I love pulled pork barbecue, and I do gravitate more towards the vinegar-based stuff, I still love the beef barbecue.
Oh, yeah, that's okay. That's what your preference. So where can we see you coming up? Are you going to be going to any events or doing a book tour? Or?
What I've been doing now is I've been cooking a lot. Mm-hmm. I've been cooking at events a lot. I just did an event at Smorgasburg in Los Angeles,
mm-hmm. I missed that. I'm
which
sorry.
Was fantastic. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. It was a crazy day because I actually curated. Seven different hamburger restaurants all to be there at the same time. One of them was Pine Burger. Yeah, which is a lot of fun. So I actually got the Pine Burger truck to drive into Smorgasburg, and people love that. Alvin Kailam was there. We brought Fuku Burger in from Las Vegas and a bunch of others. I'm also cooking at Smorgasburg again, hopefully, I think this summer at some point. I'm doing a bunch of small cooking events where I've been cooking because the plan right now is to open a restaurant. Mm-hmm. And I'm actually going to open a piece of almost living history.
Oh, that's cool.
You walk into it's going to be like a 1920s style you know, White Castle type, you know, 10 stool diner that is pitch perfect. That when you walk in, you actually feel like you're stepping into a piece of hamburger history.
Oh, nice.
You know, I'm trying to get people to stop thinking about hamburger history as this sort of sock hop, you know, 50s roller skate, you know, girls on roller skates. You know, that's not really what it's about. To me, it transcends that, and it goes all the way back to the turn of the century, and specifically to the 1920s when it was really saved by places like White Castle. So it's very important.
So where is this going to be?
In Brooklyn.
Oh. How far off? How far off are we?
We're probably still about a year away, my guess is.
Oh, I can't wait. That's so exciting. I'd like to interview right before it opens. That would be really cool. Just to kind of maybe do a little virtual tour. But I'd like to visit you. I'll be coming to see Billy. So I'd like
Definitely.
Get to go. Maybe we could actually go to hometown together. That would be kind of fun.
Definitely, I'd do that. Like, I'm there once a week anyway. So
maybe I'll just find you there.
you probably will. I'll be there at the bar.
Excellent. Well, George, thank you so much. I definitely appreciate it. Thanks for finally getting this together, and I hope you have a good week. What was last night again, the Jess Prowse thing?
Oh, last night, I actually had never met Jess before. I met her for the first time 2 nights ago. We went to the Korean Steakhouse. I don't know if you know this.
I've heard of it, yeah.
Unbelievable. We had the steak omakase, which was 9 or 10 cuts of steak in different various ages, from 240 day aged all the way down to wet aged, 20 day wet aged. And it was all cooked right in front of you on a Korean, you know, barbecue grill. It was fantastic. So I'd never met her before. That was the first time I met her. And then last night she did an event at Pig Beach.
Pig Beach. Okay. That's what it was.
Yeah. But she was working with the chef Matt from Pig Beach. And they did like he did a whole hog. It must've been like a 200 pound hog. I think it was enormous.
That's crazy.
She did a tri-tip. Oh, she had a really good tri-tip, and just to show off her rub, her rub is incredible.
Yeah, so, it's real. I use it a lot.
She's awesome.
Yeah, she's a great person. Yeah. That's really cool. That's awesome that you got.
She's good for barbecue.
I think. Well, and it's like a good soul. Like, I like people that are like are passionate and they care about the barbecue in general. It's not just like a passing fad in their heads.
Oh yeah, exactly. Yeah, she's deeply. I mean, she's deeply interested in making people eat barbecue and make barbecue, cook it specifically,
And celebrating it. That's kind of what I want to do, is celebrate it and not vilify the people that, I don't know. Just if someone's a jerk, then I just don't talk to them.
Yeah, exactly. I'm the same way.
But there's so much good out there. So excellent. Well, thank you so much. Have a great weekend. I appreciate it.
You too.
All right, take care, George.